Hey, everybody! It's a Monday, and a beautiful Monday at that. We start with scattered showers and some scattered journalism that's been happening. We go to our weather guy, Steve Regeer, who has some amazing, amazing report from ABC, where they're actually doing journalism on the border. It's nuts.
It's incredible. We only featured one, but there's actually been several. This is insane. I don't know how to deal with it.
We don't want to shock the system.
Okay.
We'll do one at a time, maybe another one tomorrow. We talk a lot about the border today and what's going on. Also, critical race theory. A great bill that is up in New Hampshire that I think every state needs to pass. When you hear it's controversial. In fact, the Governor Sununu, the Republican, air quotes, governor, says he's not going to sign it. When you see what's in the bill, and we talked to one of the sponsors of it, there's nothing controversial in it. Also, a professor up in Vermont who is a guy, he's a psychiatrist. He works with psychiatrists, psychologists, people that are in the schools evaluating your children. He is in real trouble in his school, even though he has tenure. He's being told they'd like him to resign because he's against critical race theory. When you hear him explain it, you'll understand how dangerous this ideology really is. All this and more on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
I have to apologize immediately. I'm really sorry. Could we please play the CNN interview with Linda Sanchez, Congressman Linda Sanchez, over the weekend?
I don't necessarily think that it's appropriate for journalists to be inside centers that are not permanent places for children. That children are not placed there permanently. Yeah. They're processed out of those facilities as quickly as possible, mm-hmm. and as quickly as the facilities will allow.
Mm-hmm. So
some of them are being held there longer than they're legally supposed to be.
They are doing the best they can under COVID protocols. If it were not a pandemic, I would totally understand.
I feel really bad because in the first half hour we talked about, you know, journalists and some journalists that are saying we should be allowed in to take pictures, you know, because that's happened with every president, you know. In fact, do we have the photojournalist that says that he has tried to get in with every single president? Every single president has allowed him to photograph U.S. Customs and Border Protection operations, except for Joe Biden. He is from Getty, the image special correspondent. His name is John Moore, and he's speaking out now because Joe Biden isn't letting anyone in. And I thought this was a transparent. Maybe when he fell down, he bumped his head and he forgot about that. Oh, see, there's another joke. Mm-hmm. Do we have the audio of the guy on MSNBC saying, you know, don't joke about that thing? Because that's I got to apologize again. My gosh. Guy on NBC this weekend, MSNBC, said joking about the president falling down the stairs could lead to assassinations. And
so bizarre.
What do you mean?
Well, they just,
that's clearly a logical step.
Is it?
Clearly. You joke about the president falling, okay? And the next thing, boom. He's dead from an assassin's bullet.
It's not usually the way it happens. I will say, too.
Gerald Ford fell down the stairs. Saturday Night Live, always making fun of him.
It's true.
Squeaky Fromm. Thank you very much. Good night. Mic drop.
No, none of that's rational in any way.
Since when does that matter?
No, it's true. I mean, look what they did with Trump. I mean, I know there's a Drew Holden had a great thread of all the things they said about Trump. Think piece after think piece after think piece about how we have to absolutely absolutely take it seriously that he could only, he had that issue where he had to use his other hand to help himself take a drink of water. And he looked like he was walking very gingerly down the ramp. And that is important. We must focus on it. No, it sounds like it's nothing, but we must change that. We must focus on it because it is serious. You know, every single media organization said that back in the day. And now, you know, you're not even supposed to ask a question about it or have a little chuckle.
It was a sad fall. I mean, this is, you're watching
them.
Yeah, you're watching somebody who is clearly should not be in this position. You're watching them just deteriorate in front of your eyes. And does the family not care? Does no one care? Is this the way this guy is going to go out? Really? You're going to have him remembered this way? It's just so obscene. So obscene. But they don't care about the truth anymore. Have you seen the journalist from, I think it's the Atlantic? So here's the latest on the Asian attacks from apparently the right. The Asian attacks are going on. There was somebody else that was attacked. It was horrible, horrible. 68-year-old man, Asian, punched in the face at the stop of the one train in New York. He's in critical condition. Now, we have the attacker on tape doing it. We know who it is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just a really bad guy. Black. Here's what the reporter from the Atlantic tweeted. Now, remember, we're crazy conspiracy theorists to say Joe Biden and his son are corrupt. That's a crazy conspiracy. Tariq Nasheed just tweeted, many people believe that the NYPD is orchestrating these random attacks on Asians using black people who are paid assets. I'm not sure how true this theory is, but when suspects dressed like blaxploitation characters using Jive Turkey 70s dialogue like this, it does seem questionable. Really? Alex Jones wouldn't even go there. Alex Jones wouldn't say, what are you saying? He's saying this is a false flag. That's what got Alex Jones thrown out of society and the most dangerous man of all, because he was saying false flag. This guy is not only claiming false flag, he's saying the cops are paying black people. And the only reason why you can tell this is because it's obvious a white man dressed him. What?
Yeah, that's a fascinating theory, especially because going back a long time, Department of Justice records show that the most common attacker of an Asian person is an African American, despite being 1/5 the population of white people. That is the most, and Asian people are tied with white people for how many people attack Asian people. So again, this idea that there is some sort of bizarre epidemic of violence against Asian Americans by white supremacists is not shown really anywhere in the data. I mean, it doesn't seem to be.
Well, do you need it? You have the vice president now of the San Francisco School Board talking about what's really going on with Asians. Now, of course, this woman is very conservative, being the vice president of the school board in San Francisco. She has said many Asian students and teachers I know won't engage in critical race conversations unless they see how they are impacted by white supremacy. She says, I grew up in a mostly Asian American school, and I know this experience all too well. Many Asian Americans believe they benefit from the model minority BS. In fact, many Asian Americans, teachers, students, and parents actively promote these myths. They use white supremacist thinking to assimilate and get ahead. Talk to many Lowell High School parents and you'll hear praise of tiger moms and disparagement of black and brown culture. Where are the vocal Asians speaking out against Trump Don't Asian Americans know that they're on his list as well? Do they think they won't be deported, beaten? Being a house N-word is still being an N-word. You're still considered the help. Oh.
These people,
they are.
Just these activists are just so crazy.
No, she's a vice president of the school board in San Francisco. What makes you say she's an activist?
She sounds like one.
Really?
Sounds like an activist.
No, she's just trying to help all the students.
This just obsession with skin color is remarkable. You only hear this. I only hear this from white nationalists, this level of obsession. You know, you go to a white nationalist conference, you might see this sort of obsession with color of skin. But this is what we're getting from so many who are in control of the lives of your children.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the people, we've heard a lot from people in California, and a lot of them have been saying, hey, open up those schools. Do you know what you're asking for here? Maybe this is the best year of your kid's life. Maybe your kid being taught by you or someone near you in a group sort of
maybe
setting,
even just
maybe
being
better.
Taught by Netflix, you know, and no Star Wars movies might be even better than this. By the way, the Recall San Francisco School Board campaign, the ones that found these tweets, she said, I am not going to even address tweets that were written 5 years ago. Oh, I know.
Oh, that's
5 years ago is so long. Since when is that a no-go zone for the left? So they released this. These are liberals in San Francisco that are banding together and saying enough of this. By the way, she represents schools. The school that she's talking about and the school that she's overseeing, the schools, is a mainly Asian area, and she's calling them white supremacists or using white supremacist philosophies, which is do good in school, do work hard, be a model student, be a model citizen.
Oh, what model for what? Whites. That's what kind of
model.
Exactly
right.
That is really the philosophy behind the anti-racism stuff, the white fragility stuff, is that these characteristics that we've all always looked at and said were positive. And it was my understanding it was across all societies. Things like showing up on time, working hard.
Oh, wait until I show you. Wait until next hour. Oh, I've got something that is being taught now in businesses that you won't believe. Well, I mean, you will, but it's all that. Mm. It's all that. Wait until it'll boggle your mind. Mm-hmm. Could I just leave this segment with some common sense from Bill Maher? Listen to what he is saying on segregation and who's to blame.
We seem to be entering an era of resegregation that's coming from the left.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, on many college campuses, there are separate dorms, mm-hmm. separate black dorms. Graduation ceremonies, stuff like that. How will that affect elections in the future?
You know, I think there's a great study in North Carolina that showed that, you know, racially integrated schools make people more liberal. But, you know, I think just to go back, I think that the important thing is to just realize that most non-white voters are not liberal. They don't identify as liberal. We should take that really seriously. And I think that when it like realizing that most voters don't share our values means that we should instead try to meet people where they are with the values that they actually hold, and that we should talk to them about issues that they care about.
That's one of the, you know, brainiacs from the Center for American Progress. One last clip from Bill Maher.
I never thought I would live in an era. I remember watching movies about the 50s and the blacklist era, when people would whisper that you were a communist, and all it took was somebody informing on you and saying, oh, they saw you at a rally or at some peace march and you were branded and your career was over or you were on the blacklist. People go to parties now and they don't want to talk. They're like, can I talk? I don't know your girlfriend. She might be woke. Really? I'm not making this up. People, this informant thing, it's not just what you do, it's what you don't report. That's another way the goalpost moved. I was mm-hmm. reading about this guy, Winston Marshall, the banjo player in Mumford and Sons. Mm-hmm. okay. I remember when they were a thing.
Yeah.
For about the time it took to take a piss. This guy tweeted out that he liked a book. It's a book called Unmasked. I never heard of it. You never heard of it. It's apparently not favorable to Antifa, so it's criticizing Antifa. Okay, people write books. He tweeted out, finally had the time to read your important book, You're a Brave Man, to the author. Now he has to step away. Everyone's always stepping away from the band. Oh, my God. Yeah. and this is his apology. Again, so Soviet. Over the past few days, I have come to better understand the pain caused by the book I endorsed.
So
what?
Yeah.
Would you hit somebody over the head with it? I have offended not only a lot of people I don't know, but also those closest to me, including my bandmates. What a bunch of they must be. And for that, I am truly sorry. It's so Stalin-esque. Yeah. It's so, you know what?
Right,
how
but
about I can read what I want? I'm a musician. Don't worry. Wait, it won't happen again.
Jeez.
Hopefully, people are starting to wake up to how Soviet we are becoming.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
All right, I've got to go over this bill before we introduce you to a couple of people. The propagation of divisive concepts prohibited. The definitions. Contractor means any and all persons, individuals, corporations, businesses of any kind that are in any manner entered into a contract, perform a subcontract pursuant to a contract with the state of New Hampshire. Divisive concept means the concept that A, one race or sex is inherently superior to another race or sex. Think how far we've gone. B, the state of New Hampshire, the United States, is fundamentally racist or sexist. C, an individual, by virtue of his race or sex, is inherently racist, sexist, or oppressive, whether consciously or unconsciously. D, an individual should be discriminated against or receive adverse treatment solely or partly because his or her race or sex. E, members of one race or sex cannot and should not attempt to treat others without respect to race or sex. F, an individual's moral character is necessarily determined by his race or sex. G, an individual by virtue of his race or sex bears responsibility for actions committed in the past by other members of the same race or sex. H, any individual should feel discomfort, guilt, anguish, or any other form of psychological distress on account of his or her race or sex. Or I, meritocracy or traits such as hard work ethic are racist or sexist, or were created by a particular race to oppose another race. I could have read this to you 10 years ago and said, we're going to have to start passing bills like this, and they're going to be hard to pass 10 years from now, and you wouldn't have believed me.
It's hard to believe right now.
Where is the controversial part of that?
The one part that they push back on occasionally on these things is, and I believe this is a correct criticism, that you can't really have affirmative action without these sorts of, when you have these in place, you can't really have affirmative action. Now, as a person who opposes affirmative action, I'm totally fine with that. But like California ran into some of this when they had laws that really made it seem like you're not supposed to treat people differently because of their skin color, which is obviously supposedly a universal concept. But we want to do all these affirmative action programs, so we can't have this in place. But I believe it was D of what you just read that said no adverse. Can you read the wording of that one again?
Yeah, D is an individual should be, if they're teaching, that any individual should be discriminated against or receive adverse treatment solely or partly because of his race or sex.
So that's even keeping it open to positive treatment because of your sex or your race.
Right.
It's okay, essentially, to have affirmative action. It's not trying to take that issue on.
So I'd like to know, well, first, Carlin Borisenko, an organizational psychologist and a friend of the program, doctor, how are you?
I'm doing well, Glenn. How are you?
Okay. When I say doctor, you're supposed to say doctor.
Doctor.
Yeah. So you're involved in this New Hampshire bill, HB 544. You're promoting it, you know, on your website at YouTube, and you've looked into it. How is this controversial?
You know, I really don't know. I've been working with state lawmakers over the last month or so. There's been testimony in the House of Representatives over this bill, and it really is something that shouldn't be controversial. But of course, the Democrats in the state of New Hampshire are pushing back on it very strongly. The first message, they've gone through several different messages at this point. The first one is that they said this bill was racist. Now, given the definitions you just read, I don't know how anyone can reasonably argue that. The second one that they tried is this bill is transphobic, which makes no sense since trans people are not mentioned in the bill at all. But the third one, and this is the one that seems to be sticking, is that they're saying that this bill infringes on free speech, which
the irony there. Gosh.
I know. And the fact of the matter is that this is the talking point that has stuck with some Republicans in my state, including my Republican governor, Chris Sununu, who is now listening to this Democratic talking point rather than listening to the Republicans in the House that are trying to pass this bill and to the voters who elected him.
That is unbelievable. So what are Democrats in lockstep on this, or are there some Democrats, you know, like Bill Maher was over the weekend saying this has got to stop?
No, I mean, the Democrats are pretty much in lockstep. There might be one that might defect our way, but no, they're pretty much in alignment on this one.
But what are the people that you know that are on the left? Not the politicians, the people that you know. Are they against this?
You know, I think that they've actually started to convince themselves that a concept like one race is not superior to another race is actually a racist concept. I really think that they have bought into this ideology. I don't understand it. I mean, the reading of the bill, just the plain language that you just read, is very, very clear in what you can and cannot teach. And for me, this is what I was taught growing up, that you don't treat people differently because of their race or sex. It's just, this is common sense.
This is all common sense. This is all what we've been striving for. Had we done this at the beginning of the country, you wouldn't have had slavery. You wouldn't have had all the problems that we have right now. How is this bill bad? If this bill can't get passed, you reverse everything the civil rights movement tried to teach all of us.
That's exactly right, Glenn. And a lot of people in New Hampshire think that this bill isn't needed in New Hampshire. But the fact of the matter is, this training is happening all over the place. It's happened at the University of New Hampshire. We just found out last week that the school districts in Manchester, New Hampshire, the largest school district, I believe, in the state, has done anti-whiteness training. It's happening in the Bedford schools. It's happening in the Concord schools. It's happening at Southern New Hampshire University. It's happening all over the place, right in front of people. And they still are convinced that something like this isn't necessary.
Well, you are somebody that goes into organizations. You're somebody who goes into corporations and tries to help make those corporations better. I bet your business isn't going well, seeing that you won't be involved with critical race theory and are standing against it. But you know that businesses are having to do these. They're doing them all over the country.
That's exactly right. And they're being forced into a position of doing them by their HR team and by their employees. And, you know, I'll tell you what, is my training business going well? Not exactly, because as you said, I refuse to pander to this ideology. But I'll tell you what is going well is my coaching business, where I'm coaching executives through exactly how to deal with this in their organizations, because executives don't want to do it. And they feel like they're being forced into a position of needing to based on what their employees are asking of them.
How do you do it? Quickly, because I've got to run. But how does an executive do it?
Well, I would look at an executive like Coinbase's CEO that says that this is not a part of our business. We're going to be focusing on our core business initiatives. And if you don't like it, here's a nice severance package and you can leave. And when Coinbase's CEO did that, only 5% of their employees took that severance package. And so that is a fair price to get toxic employees out of your organization that are only going to drag your organization down. That is the best strategy I've seen so far.
Really good. Thank you very much. Keith Ammon is with us. He is a Republican, the New Hampshire state representative, and he's talking about HB 544. He is one of the sponsors on that. Keith, when you were putting this together, did you think you'd have a hard time getting this through?
And we knew this would be controversial. Part of your job as a legislature, as a member of the legislature, is to be a lightning rod for discussions like this, in my opinion. So, you know, we knew it would be controversial, and it's gotten more timely. We filed the bill back in November. I think we were the first state to do it. And our process is just now working its way through to handle this bill. And it's gotten more topical as time has gone on.
So tell me about the argument on free speech.
Yeah, that's a very interesting one. That's been, I think Carlin, we heard, went over the different objections. And one by one, those kind of disappeared. And it focused on this free speech argument. What's really interesting about our legislature is we have 400 members, and they're from all walks of life. And it just so happens that one of our former chief justices of our Supreme Court, our state Supreme Court, is now a freshman representative.
Wow. Is this Robert Lynn?
That's right. Robert Lynn. And so he weighed in on his opinion on the free speech issue, and decisively, with citing cases and citing different references. And the gist of his argument against that it violates free speech is that, you know, the free speech right is an individual right. It doesn't apply to government. Government doesn't have a free speech right. People that work for the government, when they're operating under the authority of the government, don't have that right in the course of their employment. But as individuals, we all have that right. So I thought that was a very interesting take on, you know, whether it violates free speech.
All right. So if the individual, and we see this, you know, practice, in fact, that's what they're hunting in the Pentagon now, is anybody who was online saying anything that they shouldn't have said. And if you're a military member, you're not supposed to be involved in any kind of discussion on policies, et cetera, et cetera. And so we've seen that before. And the left seems to accept that. They won't accept it when it comes to, you know, school teachers and university professors and everything else. But would it protect them if they were saying, if the curriculum was not there, but they were teaching it anyway? Or is it tied to their job?
Yeah, so it's tied to your job. Like if the bill really addresses anything taxpayer funded. So if taxpayer money is funding some kind of training that deals with diversity, it doesn't ban diversity training. What it does is it puts guidelines on what types of trainings are acceptable, and obviously ones that violate that list that you read, you know, wouldn't be acceptable if this bill is passed. The interesting thing about the genesis of this bill is it came from a university professor in one of our state institutions, and that person wanted to remain anonymous, but they're seeing it in their place of employment, you know, creeping in, and it's very difficult to push back against it.
So that is that's one of the things that I noticed in reading about the bill, is that there are a lot of people that are asking to be kept out of this, but they are standing up at least quietly, but they're all terrified of the blowback. That should not happen in America.
It should not. It should not. And so, you know, if anyone's listening in other states, contact your state legislators, because that's where this battle needs to go next, is to our state houses.
But you have a Republican in Chris Sununu. I mean, it's the Sununu family. So I use Republican in, you know, the lightest of terms. How is he rejecting this? Is he going to sign it, or will he reject it?
So thou shalt not violate the 11th commandment. You know, we're both Republicans. We're in different branches of the government, and it's okay to have policy differences and discuss those. Right. So that's what I'll do here. I think what happened was he got blindsided in a in a press conference about COVID, I think it was. You know, they asked him a question about this bill. And it may have been at that time that he had only heard of it on NHPR when they were, you know, kind of slamming it about the free speech issue, right? And so that kind of locked in his position. So I think we'll be able to work. You know, there's more than one way to skin a cat. And I'll put that teaser out there. But I think we'll be able to get something accomplished this term regarding that language in 544.
Well, I wish you luck, and I hope that others do take this bill. It's, again, HB 544 from the state of New Hampshire. Look it up. Read it yourself. I mean, I kind of, in some ways, I think of the old days when they would take these bills and make them into broadsides and nail them to trees, and people would gather around and read them. Trying to get people to read this has got to be almost impossible. But you need to read it, because you can ask your friends, what part of this do you disagree with? And bring it to your state. Bring it to your state representative or your state senator and say, we need this in our state, because this is a poison that is being spread. It's called critical race theory, and it is everywhere, everywhere. Thank you so much, Keith. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You bet. I'm going to go over what Cigna is. This is the nation's largest health insurance provider. They're having a critical race theory training, and some employees took some pictures of some of the training.
They'll say, like, don't text things you don't want to become public.
Yeah.
These companies are going to start learning this eventually, but they'll still get filmed doing it. It's really...
But what people have to understand is the companies are not doing this because they actually believe in it. This is all part of the Great Reset. They're doing it because they're going to start getting ESG ratings. And if you invest it all in the stock market, your 401k or anything, especially Charles Schwab. I think Bank of America has just started this as well. All the banks have it, and all the investment firms have it. But what it is to help you invest, because we know you want to be socially minded. And so they're getting an ESG score: environment, social justice, and governance score. So do they work with their government? Do they work with their local government? Can they justify their business license, really? How are they doing on the environment? What are they doing? And are they teaching critical race theory? When that score goes down, Merrill Lynch and other groups then tell their investors, you might not want to get in with this group because they have a very low ESG score. This is why this is happening. They have to do it if they want to play ball. They think. But they're wrong. Dead wrong. You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program. Aaron Kinsvater. He is a counseling professor at the University of Vermont. And the students want him to resign because he had concerns. His concerns were put together on a video, and he released it. It's really, really well thought out, really articulate, and in my opinion, not controversial. He's expressing an opinion. If you don't like it, go pound sand. You know, make a video yourself. But they want to silence him. And we asked him to be on the program. We're thrilled to have him on. Hello, Professor. How are you?
Hello, Mr. Beck. I'm very well. Thank you.
Good. So, first of all, what do you teach at the university?
I teach psychotherapy. So I help to prepare people who are going to be helping adults who are in mental distress, and I also help to prepare counselors who are going to be working in the schools, who are going to be working with children who are experiencing distress as well.
So it's not that I would dismiss, you know, a professor of mathematics if he had the same view, but this is really in your alley, is it not?
It most certainly is. It most certainly is. And the encroachment of critical race theory into psychotherapy is truly frightening in its implications for the mental health of both children and adults.
Tell me why.
Well, there are two different reasons. For children need a particular environment in which to flourish, and it's an environment where no conditions are placed upon their sense of self-worth. Now, obviously, there are rules that they need to learn and so forth, but you don't convey to a child that they are good or bad based on what they do. And this ideology, and in particular, Kendi's version of anti-racism, establishes very strict parameters of viewing oneself and other people as either good or evil. But in Kendi's language, he's using the term racist or anti-racist. But it's essentially a good, you're either good or evil morality ideology.
And it's not, to me, it's teaching our children that you don't have a chance. If you're white now, you really don't have a chance because you're part of, you know, team evil. And if you are a person of color, well, they're teaching you, you really don't have a chance unless we all get together and stop these people on team evil. So it's just crushing the individual, is it not?
It most certainly is. It is saying that in order to be an acceptable person, you must first claim fealty to this ideology. And I would just add to that for children of color, black children, they are not safe from this either, because if they don't toe this line, then there are lots of interesting names that are being created within academia. For them, the most the one that I've just heard recently that's come out is multiracial whiteness, and it's a way to take a person of color or a black person and say, "Well, you're just white," and which is meant to be an insult,
right?
From that perspective, so I don't even know if this is this conversation can get derailed by thinking of this in terms of a white thing or a black thing. What this really is this is a racist thing. It's racism, and racism is contagious, and it once all it needs is a foothold and an air of legitimacy, and then it will flow out into society and be adopted widely to the detriment of every person. And the University of Vermont right now is giving the habits of mind that inform racism. The administration is presenting this as a form of intellectual refinement. And right now it gains legitimacy by saying, well, we're focusing on whiteness, but you know, no habit of mind that is so crude and so destructive is going to stay focused on whiteness. This is going to find its way to the doorstep of persons who have the least amount of power in society to defend themselves from it. And
give me an example of that. What do you mean by that?
Well, that people who New Americans, for example, in Burlington, don't speak the language. They don't, they're not familiar with our culture. They're just coming in. They're coming in from war-torn countries. Those people need a liberal society, one in which they are protected from ridiculous views and categorizations about who they are. And traditional liberalism that looks at people as individuals and that insists that any claims about individuals be subjected to skepticism and empiricism helps to protect even the least powerful among us. When we start making unsubstantiated claims about a link between a particular race and, vaguely defined social ills, it tends to find its way down to the people who are not in a position to protect themselves.
I hate to bring it here, but I unfortunately am going to. The I'm a historian wannabe, and I collect a lot of documents, and I collect a lot of the dark side stuff about America and the world. And I have the teacher's manuals from Germany that teach how the Jews are subhuman. And how the children are to treat those Jews, and I see a lot of similarities here. We had that study, what was it, in the 1960s, maybe 1960, where the classroom was told we're going to do blue eyes and brown eyes, and by the time they went out for recess, they were already in separate groups. I mean, this is what we're doing, isn't it?
It is, and the thing is, Glenn, like even 2 years ago, I would have said, oh, no, we're not to that point yet. I think we are dangerously, dangerously close to coming to a point that you're talking about with these teaching manuals. I have been wanting to go back and look at what this looked like when it happened in Germany, because I'm absolutely convinced that the thought processes, the habits of mind, and the dehumanization are the same. Mm-hmm. I think where people keep getting derailed in recognizing this as much of a problem as it is that they think of this in terms of this is just, this is just society talking back to the powerful, but they have to realize, and what they mean by that is, that white people are considered to exist higher on on this intersectional ladder. But this way of thinking is so contagious, and it's I'm sure that there are good intentions behind turning towards whiteness, but It would take virtually no time at all for the conversation, and I'm even hearing whispers about this now, to where now Asian people are part of the problem, because look, they're even more successful than white people are. And yet you're beginning to hear whispers of that.
We're with Aaron Kinsvater, a professor who is in trouble at his university. How much trouble, first of all, are you in?
I don't know. It's hard to say how or if this situation will escalate. What I can say now,
being on the Glenn Beck program is not going to help you.
Well, one of the things that I appreciate about you, Mr. Beck, is that I do think that you are someone who has spoken to both sides of the political aisle, and it doesn't mean that you have to think about, you don't have to believe what people on the other side of the aisle believe, but you do send out a message of unity. And people are talking about our great polarization in this country right now, I'm starting to think that it's going to be like people like you and I who are talking to our neighbors and our friends and sitting down and saying, let's have a conversation about our differences, that is going to lead us forward rather than the, rather than institutions that are putting on programs like Turning Towards Whiteness.
Oh, yeah. I will tell you that it's going to take it's going to take local effort, and it's going to take person to person just reaching out and going, come on. I mean, because you said in your speech, let me see if I can find it here real quick. You said about unity that we have a lot in common. You said we all share the same values. We all want the same thing for our university and our society. Is that true?
Well, not at the University of Vermont. But I do think that I am absolutely convinced that this is true among most people. But at the University of Vermont, their response to me, the provost's response, was to say, my values do not represent the values of the university. And then encouraged to some degree members of the university, including colleagues in my department, in their in the steps that they were taking to ostracize me. So that was a pretty shocking response from the provost of the university.
Let me give you this. This is from the vice president of the school board in San Francisco. I can't remember her name. Her last name is Collins. She just spoke about Asian Americans. She said, many Asian Americans believe they benefit from the model minority BS. In fact, many Asian American teachers, students, and parents actively promote these myths. They use white supremacist thinking to assimilate and get ahead.
Oh, boy. That has just got to stop. The use of... I mean, we can talk about why this is so effective, but I think that one thing that the average... Yeah, I realize that not everyone has time to sit down and study these matters, but people must absolutely understand that the people who are saying things like that tend to be master manipulators. And so when they are deciding what to name things, they name them in such a way that it pushes the part of our psychology that responds to guilty feelings, which is a very, very effective manipulation technique.
And when pernicious.
Pernicious. I cannot believe how ubiquitous this is. And white supremacy is a good example of that. Now, no reasonable person would not say that white supremacy, as it was at a time where one particular race was holding itself above another, was not a bad thing. And so what people who are using terms like this have done is to say, we understand now that the very worst thing that you can call someone is a racist or a white supremacist. So we're going to change what that means in order to guilt people into not putting up too much of a fight.
Okay.
When we ask that they adopt these other ideologies.
A professor from the University of Vermont, his name is Aaron Kinsvater. Oh. I will tell you, you're braver than I even thought you were. That is fantastic. Please stay in touch with me. Anything we can do to help you, you please let me know. Thank you.
Just keep reaching across the aisle, Glenn.
You got it.